Hello and welcome back to the layover.
What this show's called. That's what it's called. That is what it's called.
Another perfect intro.
Some things never change.
We now, for the first time this season, very excited to announce that we have an Irish majority on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
that is true. Yeah, 3 out of 4.
I'll allow it.
Don't we normally have an Irish majority on the podcast?
I guess that's true. You always do.
Well, actually, but not this season,
though. This season, it's been half.
I guess not when we're in season. Sure.
And Ben, you're like half Irish because you claim to have citizenship, but you have no way to prove it.
Ben is more Irish than you.
I do. I'm on the citizen registry.
Prove it.
His second name is Doyle.
Prove it.
Surely there's a thing you can look up.
Surely there is, but you have no way to prove it. That's why you're only half.
You would have to imagine there is.
My neighbor was called Doyle. I'll call over to them and ask them.
Yeah.
I think often that's the point of a passport. But anyway.
Can somebody correct me if I'm wrong here, Brian? Have you been on... No, you were on the layover one time for like a throwback, like a recap episode or something, weren't you?
For like a mailbag or something.
Yeah, I think I was there for like a section of a video.
We did throwback to season one.
Okay, that's what it was.
But this is your first real layover experience. I would actually say it's quite interesting, Brian, that like there's been an 11-season gap since you have last been on the show. The show has changed
a lot.
Quite a bit since you have been on. I mean, the layover did not even exist the last time that you were on jet lag. What was it like? Did it feel different to be on season 15 as opposed to 4 or whatever?
Yeah, it felt really different. I mean, you were just getting recognized while we were shooting a lot more. Like, you didn't really get recognized at all when we were shooting the first few times. So that was interesting and fun, and it was nice to see the community in real life. But yeah, I think that I was more aware of actually trying to be likable.
Sure.
But no, just like the audience is so big now and they're so passionate. Like, you just want to do a good job and keep them loving the show.
But I feel like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this. I feel like, well, maybe this is a question for you, Brian. Do you feel like the difference was bigger between season 1 and 4 or 4 and 15? Because to me, I feel like the difference between seasons 1 and 4, massive. I feel like the difference between 4 and 15 to me is like, different, but not crazy.
In terms of gameplay and game design and everything else, I think the difference between 1 and 4 is massive. Like, you'd really figured it out. And then once you hit like tag and everything, I think you really figured out the game mechanics and you've been learning more and more about that. But just purely from an audience perspective, it just like the pressure and fun and excitement of actually going in to do another season felt just a bit of a step up. But yeah, the game mechanics and everything felt very different.
I think it's like the pace of change was very fast from 1 to 4.
Yes, but very fast.
Then, you know, just a lot of change just based on time since 4. But anyways, we have much to cover because I think we actually have, in some ways, more than an episode to cover because of the weird structure of this season, the fact that Brian couldn't answer for himself last episode.
What were you saying?
So we were talking about your scent.
What? That's what you came up with as your bit there? We were talking about his scent?
Yeah.
My musk.
Brian talks a lot about his musk.
Is that true? I didn't hear him bring it up.
No, I just like sweat a lot when I run.
Oh, that is true. You did talk a lot about sweating.
Yeah.
Well, you, I think, have a similar thing to what I have, which is I think we are both sensitive to textures.
Yeah.
Which for me is an ADHD thing. And for you, I think, is a similarly neurodivergent thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hate the feeling of sweat on my, like, you see me in one of the episodes, I'm literally using tissue paper from like the cafe cart to get the sweat off me. I just hate the feeling of salt and things on my skin. Like,
yeah.
It drives me crazy.
Sweaty doesn't bother me as much, but wet clothes really bothers me a lot. Like, I won't do like a flume ride at an amusement park or anything, but it was funny. It was like, I was realizing now that I was on your team that it was like, oh, like when Brian gets sweaty, he needs to like change his shirt. Like, it's like a, you know, I was like, oh damn, we need to preserve Brian's beautiful skin.
I've never connected this to my neurodivergence before, so that makes sense.
I know that at least for me, because I only learned this recently, that it is a very common ADHD thing to be sensitive to textures.
I struggled with a lot in secondary school because I went to an all-boys Catholic school and we had to wear the big, like, woolly itchy jumpers, and I refused to wear it. Yeah. And the pants, like, I just wear like tracksuit bottoms and the school shirt into school because I just couldn't handle the clothes, and teachers would give me grief constantly over it.
Well, that was Adam and Brian's neurodivergence corner, but now we can talk about the episode.
Oh, you want to talk about the episode now? Okay.
Yeah. Sam, I was just talking about how I'm ADHD. I get distracted. I go on tangents.
But that reminded me of, which actually is going back even further, is like you would think that guy who doesn't like the feeling of sweat and therefore wants to change often would want to have a lot of room in his luggage for shirts.
Yeah.
But seemingly that guy prioritizes grappling hooks.
I had a big bag. Big bag.
Okay.
Big bag. Big grappling hook. When I saw that grappling hook, I was like, oh boy, I did not expect that. I expected a grappling hook.
Yeah.
That was a honker.
I really enjoyed the cut of that in the edit of just like no explanation, just we had grappling hooks for some reason.
I saw a lot of comments that were kind of asking for an explanation there. Do you care to provide one?
I don't want to.
No?
What if you needed a grappling hook?
What if you need a grappling hook? It doesn't need an explanation. It explains itself.
Should we explain why Ben had a grappling hook?
If I needed a grappling hook.
I don't know why he had a grappling hook. I don't know how he knew I had a grappling hook. That was a surprise for me, too.
I didn't know you had a grappling hook. I assume everyone has a grappling hook.
Like, my reaction to that in the scene is just like me, like, honestly seeing the tiny little grappling hook for the first time. I had no idea that it was going to do that.
And you never asked for an explanation on why he happened to bring a grappling hook too?
Well, like, I posted the purchase screenshot from Amazon of the grappling hook on Instagram in, like, March or something. Like, whenever you would ask me to be on Jetlag, I was like, what ridiculous thing can I buy this time around? And I posted that thing as an Easter egg, and I figured Ben figured it out from that.
No.
I think that's more or less right.
I will say, too, that in terms of props, and we addressed this earlier, Brian, but we have to apologize to you once again for cutting out your beautiful cards that you brought. They're really fun, and I really wanted to leave them in. But as I mentioned before, the biggest problem in that edit was that we were spending way too long waiting at that train station during the delay. And so it was like a real kill your darlings thing. It was like, I cannot justify keeping this
in. People are going to see them in the cut for time. People are going to see them in the cut for time.
They'll be the star of the cut for time.
I just delivered that bit completely wrong, too, because my entire plan was to like just pitchy talking dolls of yourselves. And like, I can't bring the dolls with me. So I brought birthday cards that I painted onto it. But yeah, we were just in the train station waiting during the stalemate. And I was like, maybe I should show them now so we have a bit of entertainment. And I just kind of landed a bit flat.
Okay, so episode.
Yep.
Starting from Zermatt, we rehashed most of it last time.
We did. We ran through it.
I think kind of probably the place to start is really the first moment of, you know, the first hiccup for y'all, which is your route no longer works.
Yes.
Due to delays. So in the moment, you make a decision to, I guess, kind of go towards Zurich.
Yeah.
But obviously not all the way there. And the only viable route that y'all can find that get you to, I guess one detail that we didn't go into last time is basically there was one very advantageous train to Stuttgart. Out of Zurich.
Yes. I
want to say 7:30 or something.
No, 6:37, I believe.
6:37.
I was just reviewing the edit on this, I believe, 6:37.
And I think the next train was not until 2 hours later.
I believe that that is correct.
Yeah, the next nonstop to Stuttgart.
Well, and again, and I should point this out, and this is really important, low speed to Stuttgart.
Yeah.
Right? This was a big part of the key is that, and this is a thing that you'll see a lot in this episode that we are really fixated on, is that Germany does this thing where sometimes there are low-speed trains that are only like 5%, 10% slower than the high-speed trains, but they are classified as low-speed. And so it's like, you know, a big focus for us was how to find low speed but long distance and still pretty express trains between locations. And this was like a big thing that made this Stuttgart train very attractive, is that it was classified as a low speed train, even though it had very few stops and moved pretty dang fast.
Yeah, they seem to classify it more on, like, the physical train that is operating it, despite the fact that, like, they're often seemingly using the same rails. Yeah. So, like, a lot of times there's, like, the ICE trains, the one that kind of look like high-speed trains, operating these services on lines that can only operate low speed.
Yeah.
And then you have vice versa, like this case, where, was it a EuroCity train? Do you remember?
I think it was a EuroCity, Or an InterCity, maybe. I can never remember the difference between them.
I think EuroCity means it goes international, I think. So I think it would have been
that. Yeah, you're probably right about that.
Anyway.
But yes, it was a very attractive train. And it was, as we note in the episode, the exact same train route. We're pretty sure the exact same route that Ben and I took in Schengen Showdown.
Yes. Yes.
Certainly for the initial steps, yeah. Because we took almost exactly the same train. But basically, to sum up that point, it's like, this was exactly the right strategy for y'all to focus on. I mean, it's hardly a strategy because it's mostly, honestly, luck, but like finding these routes.
I would say it was a strategy. I would say it was
a strategy, but it's mostly down to just what the train frequencies are. Is like, do the train frequencies work in a way that the connection that you can make is faster than the connection that we can make?
Sure, sure.
I mean, it's true that like down the line, it starts to become a lot more complex. So like finding that route is, yes, it is a mix of luck and strategy. How about that?
Sure, sure.
I do think like ultimately, especially having played this game this many times, like this game really boils down to how many train frequencies can you get in front of them?
Yeah.
Like when can you get an opportunity to increase a train frequency in front of them?
For sure.
And this was a great example of one of those.
So TLDR, like not only was this the fastest route, I guess the reason why I was saying in this case it was mostly luck is because there are circumstances in which you find a route that's really advantageous. In this case, it was just straight up the fastest route worked in this way.
Well, I mean, I will note that I agree that there was certainly luck involved, but I will note this was a big part of why, one, we were so focused on getting to Zurich and had to do a lot of what I think was, and I'll give a lot of credit to Brian on this because he was the one who ultimately found our route, like a lot of pretty strong route finding in order to make it so that we could still get on this train. Like we had identified this.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is like, this was not the only way out of Switzerland, for example. This was why we went through Zurich to Stuttgart, all this stuff. The more intuitive route is actually to go through Frankfurt, but we identified that that was not going to be advantageous to us.
Yeah.
So like, the fact that we had identified that there was a good path here, you know, we had choices in the paths we took. It wasn't as though this was the only way to go and it just happened to have good frequencies.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, from our perspective, I think it was fairly quickly obvious that that was the train that y'all would want to go to just because it was like so superlatively better. So like we were very fixated too on how do we make that train?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And well, we struck out. We really looked at every option and just could not.
You couldn't. Yeah. I mean, we did the same research you did and had determined you could not make the train.
And it was close, annoyingly.
Yeah, very close.
So, of course, okay, your train gets delayed. Mm-hmm. Seemingly like a higher than average number of delays that evening because we were also experiencing some delay issues. Didn't end up being as much of an issue for us. So y'all basically needed to find like any route that would get you physically closer to Zurich before the rest period, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was all a bit of a blur when we came into that train station. I remember the big map on the board, and we were just like looking around that map trying to find places to go. At least I wasn't using my phone so much at that point. I just found like anywhere further north, further away from them that we can get out from before the rest period. And what was the name of the town we ended up going to that we found?
Brig. I think.
Brig, yeah.
I believe it was Brig.
No, it wasn't Brig.
I believe it was, it Brug?
It might have been a train to
Olten.
Yeah, Brig is a very different place.
No, we went through Olten, but we ended.
But I think it was Brig. I think we ended our day in Brig.
It was Olten to Brig, I thought. Am I wrong?
No, Brig's on the completely other side of the country.
Brug, sorry, Brug.
Brug.
B-R-U-G.
Oh, yeah, that looks right.
B-R-I-G, Brig is a different place in Switzerland.
Brug.
Yeah. Brug, not Brig, sorry.
Was there a nice hotel?
Well, I remember making a lot of jokes about how we were in Brug, which is a lot like the movie In Bruges, which I did not make the edit. I cut them out myself, my own joke. I do that a lot.
They were funny and epic, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty funny and epic.
Yeah. Well, this was an interesting sort of route finding exercise where I think so often when you are in big hub that is fairly close to another big hub, going to an intermediary point between those two will not actually help you very much at all. Oftentimes it'll make it slower because, like, usually it's like, well, the train originates from the hub where you're at anyway and maybe goes through. And so I remember being like a little bit skeptical that we would be able to find a route that would get us to Zurich faster than just starting in Bern. But sure enough, I mean, frankly, with the number of trains that exist in Switzerland, it ended up being possible here.
But it was crazy that there was a route that did work, but by a margin of 1 minute, like on two different fronts. Like,
yeah, it's so crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah, the rest period often has created some of like the narrowest circumstances. Because like oftentimes when we get into a pickle with the rest period, we have been able to figure out solutions, but they're often like the craziest solutions. Like what we were dealing with, Adam, when we were crossing like the Dutch-Belgian border or something after Ben, and we had to like take a taxi to a different train line.
Yeah.
It was like super low frequency. And it was like,
yeah, tag two.
Yeah.
Yeah. The rest periods, they create, well, I think it's because like, I mean, obviously it's because like the rest periods are the situations that create some of the weirdest incentives that are different from the normal incentives of people using a transit system. Like, you know, most of the time our incentives are similar to the people who are usually using a transit system, which is that I want to get to a specific sometime, you know, place, like, and I just want to get there as fast as I can. When it's like, I want to get to a specific place, but I need to stop at exactly 8 p.m. and restart at exactly 6 a.m. It's like, well, the system's really not designed for that.
Yep. So, of course, from our end, we were like, what the fuck are you doing?
I feel like that's part of the reason I like that plan, too. I like the uncertainty of like, what the fuck? Like, I feel like the more chaos and uncertainty you throw into it, it makes it harder to chase.
Well, I'll note that even in that instance, my recollection is you guys didn't even realize that we weren't going to make it to Zurich before the rest period until the next morning, essentially. Like, as we're going into the overnight, I think you haven't looked at it super closely. Like, the first mention that we get from you is in the morning, and you're like, oh my gosh, they ended the day not in Zurich. I think that it was because of a potential slight discrepancy in our interpretations of how delays worked, or like you thought that we had a legal delay that we could take, but we didn't actually. I don't remember the specifics of it.
Well, yeah. So we do have like some convoluted rules about when you are allowed to experience a delay going into the rest period, which actually in practice with trains, there's a very narrow circumstance in which you are allowed. Basically, it's like, the delay could only have been incurred between the previous stop before the rest period.
Yeah.
Like, you would have basically had to be on time at the last stop before the rest period. And then after that, something happened that forced you to go into the rest period. So, like, you can't willingly experience a delay into the rest period. It has to be that, like, you are trapped on the train.
Yes.
So it's only, like, with most delays, you'd just be forced to get off the last stop before the rest period.
Right.
But anyway, that didn't apply here. The truth is, we realized this basically immediately when we wrapped. Because it was like, final look at the tracker. Oh, wait, they're not in Zurich.
But then you can't strategize about it, right?
We couldn't discuss it.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, we've seen this information, but we can't decide what to do with it until the moment we start rolling the next morning.
Yeah.
And of course, you'd seen our whole sequence about like we had decided, we had this toss-up decision between, we had trains with a couple minutes of the start towards Zurich, but we were sort of less keen on that because we knew we would miss the Stuttgart train. And then we had this alternate route that was Basel to Strasbourg to, I believe, Stuttgart again, that would get us to Stuttgart faster than we could get to Stuttgart through Zurich. So believing that y'all were going on the train that you actually were,
yes,
as the rest period came down, we were thinking that's probably a risk worth taking because we don't necessarily think we are going to catch up before Stuttgart.
Right.
So the ability to gain time to Stuttgart was attractive. Of course, the flip side was we knew that it required two quick connections. Mm-hmm. So it was a risk. Because if we missed any one of those connections, we would lose way more time than we would lose by going through Zurich. So it was a tough call. But yeah, to be clear, we would not have gotten to Stuttgart before y'all had gotten to Stuttgart.
I believe that what was going to happen was that you would have gotten there before we would have left.
That might be right.
Because I think that we were like, we know we're going to have to earn coins. And then our plan, I think at the time, still was to take a train to Nuremberg. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that was the calculation we had made, was that you guys would be able to get to Stuttgart while we were still going to be there and catch us. But mm-hmm. I do think you're right. Yeah, maybe it wasn't before us, but it was before we left, which is just as important, you know.
Of course, that wouldn't have actually happened in reality because later, you know, the train was delayed. So definitely that was a relief because it was like, okay, made the right call, not due to the right logic, but we made the right call at least, you know, in a roundabout way. But yeah, of course, then you see the cameras roll at 6 a.m. Based on information, it was like, we didn't in that, you know, 2 minutes that we had to decide know, or at least we didn't immediately know how soon you could get to Zurich.
Right. And you also didn't know how many coins we had too. So it was like, well, maybe they'll get stuck in Zurich.
Yeah, that too. So it was like, from our point of view, it was like, there was no way y'all would do this willingly. Like there was not logic to do this willingly.
Yes, exactly.
Because you could have had more challenge time in Zurich. You could have spent fewer coins. The only reason you would have done this is if something had gone wrong. And from our point of view, the something that gone wrong, it could have been that y'all had run out of coins.
Totally.
And therefore, this was as far as you could get.
For sure.
And you knew that we would have gotten to Bern by the end of the day. So, of course, yeah, that's why we quickly made the decision, okay, we're going to Zurich. We're abandoning that other route, which, of course, was good in the end. Anyway, that's our side. Then y'all... Look, I would never have thought that y'all could make a 0 minute, especially in Switzerland.
Especially in Switzerland.
Yeah.
I feel like every time I take a train in Switzerland, like as a novelty, I look at the Swiss clock on the platform, watch it hit the second mark, and see it move on that exact second mark.
I mean, you see in the clip, I was so anxious then. And the conductor, or whatever you call them, was staring at us. It's like, why are you standing outside the door like this? And you can hear the little chime when it ticks over to 6 a.m. And like, I think we were literally a second away from not getting in that door.
Yeah, I do think, and I kind of hate this, but there's frankly like no way around it in a situation like this. I think that, you know, it probably mattered a little bit that the conductor noticed that we were standing there and was like, okay, these guys are probably trying to get on this train.
Yeah, they're not trying very hard.
Yeah.
But,
no.
But we didn't delay it.
No, no.
I mean, it's still left on the minute, but I do think that that was probably the difference between leaving at the end of the minute as opposed to the start of the minute.
But they always leave at the start of the minute. That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, and I will even say, we got on the train and it didn't leave for another probably 30 or 40 seconds. Like,
yeah,
I do think that we were probably going to be okay no matter what. But yeah, I don't know. I do think the fact that the conductor noticed us there probably helped a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm sure from, again, my experience in Switzerland, that at least some trains are clearly scheduled to leave at the start of the minute. Because again, like I've had that experience many times of like watching the second hand. I do know, though, I recently learned that in Japan, they schedule their trains down to the second. So like they will have a second within the minute that the trains are supposed to leave.
That's crazy.
I think mostly for the configuration of like which trains are on the track at the right time, more so than like the passenger thing. But it's like, you know, you can be seconds late or ahead of time as a Japanese train driver.
Wow.
Anyway. So y'all make it, you'll make some orange juice, very fitting for breakfast.
Yeah,
made some juice. It was good juice.
And it was good.
Did we all try it? Brian, did you try the juice?
We all tried it.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Strained through Ben's definitely not sanitary neckerchief, whatever, bandana.
Bandana. I mean, I guess I hadn't worn it. It was just sort of
on
my bag, but I suppose my bag had been through hell and back.
Yeah. For sure not sanitary, but fine.
We also cut the oranges with my credit card, so not sanitary either.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I will say, I don't even believe that we had to try it as part of the challenge. I think we just wanted to.
Yeah.
And it was lovely.
Freshly squeezed juice.
It was really nice.
Yeah,
just what we needed.
Totally. I will say, yeah, I was proud of our speed on that, because that's like not a super, I mean, we had to buy items, you know, like prepare them, do this whole thing. Like, I think that challenges like this are sort of a good proof of concept that I think, you know, we sort of always have to keep in mind in game design, which is like you write down something like this and it's like, this takes a little while to do. But then it's like, but if you were really in a hurry, you could do this pretty quick, like if you really wanted to. Also, yeah, we had three people, which helped.
Yeah. Like I, watching the edit, I don't remember saying it, but like just get one good squeeze and get rid of it because you just get the one big.
Yeah.
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 And we had a lot of oranges too.
Yeah, we did. We bought that entire store's worth of oranges at the end of the day, didn't we?
We did.
Like 11 oranges has been crazy. Yeah.
That's great.
So, yeah, this ends up being like narrow death escape number one, ultimately. Yeah,
one of many.
Yes.
One of many,
so
many.
We get
many
on the train to Stuttgart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, literally worth considering that, like, if that train had left before y'all got on, I think y'all would have had to start going like rat mode or something, because we would have been in Zurich before.
Sure. Yeah, we would have been in big trouble.
So y'all could have made some, you know, swerve or something, but you definitely could not have remained on the fastest route. So it's like, that was clutch. And what's crazier about that is like seconds of difference made for hours of gain by getting that Stuttgart train.
Yeah.
In classic jet lag fashion.
Classic tag.
Yeah.
Classic tag, yeah. And then we were on that train for a long time. I mean, I just remember like in filming, it's always funny, like the difference between real time and runtime, because it's like that train was like, what, like 3 hours long?
Yeah.
But you kind of move through it in runtime because it's like we're just kind of hanging out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, our best option then was there was not a good nonstop to Stuttgart for, I believe it was 2 hours later, but we could end up, I think, roughly an hour behind by taking, I think, a combination of three different trains, starting with the one that I think is literally the one that y'all took in Schengen Showdown. I think the first one maybe was like to the exact same, because it was still like a Swiss train, but it went through that exclave and we passed those falls that I guess are pretty famous.
The Rhine Fall.
Rhine Fall. I noticed I was at Zurich Airport recently, and you know how on the People Mover, the video comes up, like the train, you remember that? It's like, you take the train and it's like, they have like, Brian would enjoy this. Brian, have you seen these? It's like when the train moves really fast and they have like LED light bars, but because you're moving fast, it turns into like a moving picture thing.
I know what you're talking about, but I haven't seen it on a train.
Well, anyway, they have that at Zurich Airport. And I noticed when I was there like last month that they had the Rhine Falls on that train video thing that when you arrive or whatever.
That's cool.
So they're clearly famous. I don't know if we realized how famous they are.
I was genuinely blown away when I saw the Rhine Falls. I had no idea they existed. And I feel like that's such a rare thing these days with travel, of just like stumbling upon what essentially felt like a world wonder and not knowing that it existed. Like, I love that. I love not knowing what I'm going to see while I'm traveling.
Yeah.
It was awesome because I think the only reason we caught them was that Ben and I remembered them from when we had taken that train before.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason we had caught them was that I think the conductor or something had told us, like, sit on this side of the train so you can see the Rhine Fall. And we were like, the what? And then, like, you know, a few minutes later, we were like, holy shit. But what was funny, too, was, you know, we saw it in winter, so it was much less. I mean, you can look at the footage. Like, it's much more striking this time because it's warmer weather, and so there's much greater water flow. So it was sort of cool because it was like seeing it for the first time all over again.
It felt like something out of a Tolkien novel. Like, it was very, very whimsical.
Totally. Yeah. It was awesome.
The other thing that happened, like, just after we passed the Rhine Fall, it was the first time I'd ever had my passport checked on a inter-Europe border hop. Because I guess they just do spot checks.
Isn't that illegal? I thought that was not legal.
Well, I forget the exact... There's like countries that are Schengen zone, and then there are countries that are like de facto Schengen zone.
Oh, maybe.
Switzerland, I believe, is fully Schengen.
Is it?
It's completely Schengen area, yes. The countries with open borders to the Schengen area are the microstates. It's like Andorra, Okay. San Marino, Vatican City, Monaco, I think.
Well, I think what it actually is, and I think this might actually be somewhat controversial, is that in response to rhetoric around immigration, a lot of countries have started doing more and more spot checks. Mm. I think the deal is, I'm looking up right now, it's like Schengen means like no like regular checks, but spot checks are allowed
sure.
on the border.
That's crazy.
Or something like that. Look, sure. don't trust us. Don't trust anything we say on the layover. This is not fact checked, but I think it's something like that. But they also didn't like, I handed over my Irish passport, as I now do whenever I'm in the EU, because usually yeah, it's easier. But yeah. they really didn't like the fact that it had zero stamps at all.
Mm,
so yeah. then I handed them my American passport, and they appreciated that more.
Gotcha.
Because I guess I looked like a drug smuggler or something, having a completely clean passport, and that's fair.
Switzerland is weird, man.
Yeah. So I think the next real thing is y'all pop out in Stuttgart, right?
Yeah.
We do.
It's a long yeah. train. But,
yeah. Long train. And then we are worried a little bit that you guys might be getting there soon.
Yeah, with good reason.
With good reason. Well, and then we pull the odd number curse, the no even numbered train curse, which I'll do a little bit of behind the scenes here. I think that we can say this. And this is the type of stuff people come to the layover for. When we played most of our games now, and in this season of Tag, we separate our cards into the A deck and the B deck. Basically, mm-hmm. we take all of our favorite of our challenges, and those are in the A deck. And we have a bunch of extra challenges in case we need them, but those are in the B deck, so that there's a high likelihood that our favorite challenges will be the ones that get pulled. And the A deck was running pretty low. So we knew that there were, I don't know, there were maybe what, guys, like 10 cards left? Like
yeah. I think it was 10 or 11 at this point.
Something yeah. like that. And we knew that this was one of them. And so we had discussed, like, what if we pull this card? Like, is that going to be bad? Is that, you know, going to, that's a way to get a lot of coins, but whatever. And so, Brian, you had actually had looked at this, and that's why you have such an immediate reaction where you're like, oh, no, I checked, and I do think it is okay.
Yeah. Looking back, I don't know if it's against the spirit of the game, but I know Michelle does a lot of prep and things too, but like I'd written down every single challenge in my notebook, and anytime I knew someone had done one of the challenges, I was crossing it out so I could like see what was left and like strategize more for what, or just think about the challenges that could come up in certain locations.
Well, it wouldn't surprise you to learn that Michelle was doing the exact same thing yes. to the extent that, like, I don't know if you experienced this, Adam, but, like, Michelle would draw very strong conclusions.
She would, yeah.
In terms of, like, she would be like, they have this many coins, because that's what my spreadsheet says, because I think they did this challenge here, this
yeah,
challenge
yeah.
here, this challenge.
Which we cut a lot of that out because she was wrong.
Well, I mean, it was like in broad strokes, she got a lot of it right, but yeah, she would come yeah. to like very precise conclusions
yeah.
or at least beliefs.
Well, because another thing that I'll mention that you aren't allowed to do is when you get the deck, you can't look through it and see what got done.
Right.
You can notice how many cards are left in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can determine based on that how many challenges might have been done, but you can't look and see what remains.
And there's no like clear way to know what challenges the other teams have done no, unless they tell no. you. But sometimes they tell you, and that's just like a game advantage.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you can tell from the map.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's true too.
At least, you know, have a theory. Like we were able to successfully deduce that you were playing, well, really, Michelle,
yeah.
deduce that you played Petanque based on like, we know that this is left and we see you went to a park. Why else would you go to a park?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny. It's like, I think that it's the type of thing that is, as you noted, Michelle does this too. I think you see guests do it more because I think from our perspective, we're like this for content reasons. We don't want to deal with it narratively mm-hmm. because we're like, we don't like the idea that the, as much as possible, we try to reduce the extent to which we are operating off of information that we can't explain to the audience. Like,
right.
we don't want to have to explain, like, okay, audience, there's 12 cards left, and here's what all of them are. And so we don't want them to have to learn what 12 cards are and keep them in their heads, right?
Right.
So I think we don't tend to focus on that in the way that we play. But it is, like, to be fair, a perfectly legal game move to operate off of, like, what information you have, especially because, as we've pointed out, it's not that much information. And it's also the case that that card could have been pulled by somebody and we didn't even know about it. Like, we're also just speculating as to what cards have even gotten pulled so far.
Yeah. It's also just a lot of work to do it.
That's true,
too. Yeah.
I'd love to fully justify it by narrative reasons, but...
But yeah, I think the other thing is, like, you have three seasons of Tag under your belt in that same exact location. So I kind of wanted to prepare a little bit. And like, I watched all of the seasons, the past seasons over again, and took a bunch of notes on just like places that kept coming up and tactics and all of that to try and learn.
Damn, y'all are some tryhards.
I didn't want people telling me that I didn't care this time around.
Fair. Fair.
No, it's true. Brian was really on a mission to prove himself here. You were so eager to, I mean, I think I mentioned this in the last episode, you were so eager to get to doing the challenges this time.
Well, because I wasn't even aware of the second place thing myself, and I kind of knew what was about to happen. Well, I knew what was happening from the start. Like, I was like, I'm not going to get to actually do anything this season. So this, once we actually got the second thing, I was like, yes, great. Okay, we can do some challenges.
You were locked in. I mean, you were some of the most locked in I've ever seen somebody on the show.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like, you were moving too, you know. You were running when we needed to be quick, like, which is great. I mean, that's exactly like the number one thing that I think makes a guest good on jet lag is frankly just like caring and trying a lot. Like, I think that's huge part of what makes a guest compelling on the show.
That is one of the advantages of like having other seasons done before coming on to the show too, because like first and fourth season I didn't have that much data on like what actually works well on camera and all of that sort of stuff too. So it's like, yeah, this time around it's like, yeah, kind of being laissez-faire and kind of just acting like you don't care because you think it's funny, it just didn't work. Well, it worked a little bit.
But anyway, we're falling behind. Mm-hmm. There's still more stuff that happens.
There is.
Yeah. Wait, what was the challenge y'all did in the Stuttgart? I forget. Or did you just pull a challenge?
It's just the curse.
We just pulled
the curse. Oh, it's just the curse. Yeah. Right,
even
right,
number
sorry.
Curse.
Right. Which, yeah, generally was probably net a good pull, considering y'all's route.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to speak too much about, you know, how it will affect us in the future, but
sure.
In this circumstance, yes, not good.
Yeah. In the immediate term, it was not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So we, of course, y'all take, I believe if I remember correctly, so much happened this day. It's hard to keep it all track in my mind.
A lot happens.
Yeah. But like, I believe y'all once again have a better connection towards Nuremberg was your next stop, right?
Yes. Well, you see that we reconsider our route quite a bit because now we have to do something even more. I mean, in Tag, I think you're always looking at your move and then the move after that. When you have this curse, you really have to do that because you have to really ensure, like, if I go to this place, am I going to get stuck there? Because there's every chance in the world that you go to some station and every useful train out for the next 2 hours is at an even time. Mm-hmm. And I think for a while we were struggling to find a good option out of Nuremberg that was also like ideally low speed. Like the fact that we needed it to be like low speed going in the right direction and at an odd time, it really started to limit us. And so we considered doing Frankfurt, which I think had slightly better options in general, but we ultimately find a route that we are relatively happy with out of Nuremberg.
I was eager to move further away from Sam and Toby's wind zone too. So going east to Nuremberg was attractive.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That was the big reason behind it, you know?
Yeah, and as I recall, it was a pretty tricky call on our end of what to do because the train that y'all connected to was slightly faster, took a different route, and went past Nuremberg. Like, you could have stayed on it past Nuremberg to other stops.
I think we couldn't have because we were out of coins, but yes, theoretically. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. From our perspective, I think you could have. So I think we actually don't show a lot of this, but I remember it being a very tricky call in the moment that ultimately I think we probably made, maybe not the best call, but one of the better calls, because our option was a slower train going on a different route that didn't overlap, So our concern was, what if y'all got off on the way to Nuremberg and we're on a completely different line?
Yes, which we had considered, and we actually cut this out, but I can talk about it in a minute. We strongly considered doing exactly that, but decided against it.
Mm-hmm. What was the place we'd consider? What was it called?
It was Ansbach. That's we strongly considered getting off at Ansbach and transferring to a train going north, but we decided against it.
Too risky.
And I think ultimately our decision out of Stuttgart was basically, do we go to Nuremberg and take this, you know, route that won't really let us catch up much, but will get us to Nuremberg where we think you're going? Mm-hmm. Or we had a route that would take this big loop around through, I believe...
Did it go through Würzburg?
Frankfurt.
Or Frankfurt? Yeah, yeah. Through Frankfurt, I think.
It might have been Würzburg, might have been Frankfurt, but it did like a big C shape. Mm-hmm. And we believed it would sort of get us broadly physically in front of y'all faster than y'all could travel. But it was a really tricky call because it was like, we could get physically in front of you, but there were like three different hubs that from our perspective, you might route through. And we could cover one of them, but we couldn't cover all of them. And the other thing about that is like, at that time, it was like, we would have to cede essentially like 4 or 5 hours of progress to do that.
Well, and it's also worth noting, like, you guys need to catch us. Time is increasingly a big problem for you.
Right. So, like, in order to do that, I think basically why we didn't was, well, one, we didn't really have consensus that we thought it was a good route. But some of the arguments against were, like, we would have to nail the decision of where to get off this route. Like, which hub do we cover in front of y'all? And that would sort of be putting all of our eggs into that basket. It's like, it would basically be probably our last shot. By the time we would get there, we really couldn't let you get further or spend more time while still having time to get into our territory. So ultimately, we decided that, once again, we should just follow behind y'all on this less advantageous train towards Nuremberg.
Well, and I do think that it must be noted that, you know, we don't see at the end of this episode whether or not you guys are going to get to us in Nuremberg, right? That's the cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. But I think that we can say in this episode that it was the right decision for you to do that because your train, if it had not hit a tree, would have gotten in before we had left. Like, yes, that is something that we do know by the end of the episode, is that your scheduled time of arrival occurs while we are still in Nuremberg. And so theoretically, you would have caught us right there and then. So I think on that logic alone, your decision is, I would argue, vindicated.
Yeah.
We did decide that the bomb threat was too strong of an option, so called in the trees instead.
The bomb threat's so played out by now.
I know.
You know, they hardly trust them anymore. They know us. They know Ben's voice.
Yeah, they're sick of me.
Yeah. Anything else to kind of go over from y'all's perspective?
In the episode? Well, we do the puzzle box. I mean, got to cover that.
Yeah, the puzzle box is a very good one. Shout out to Amy. She's done it again.
Really fun.
That was a great one.
That was super impressive. I was very worried when I saw the crosswords pop up because I cannot spell like any sort of word game.
No, I locked in on that crossword.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what? This is a really good avenue for us to shout. I believe that we do this on screen, but we should shout out that the crossword was made by a man by the name of Adam Aronson, who Amy is friends with, who is like a very accomplished crossword maker.
Really?
And has had like crosswords in the New York Times and the New Yorker, and who is a fan of jet lag. And so
I didn't even know that.
Well, because like, no shade to Amy, who's brilliant and who I believe could construct a crossword, but I was doing that crossword and it's very hard to design crosswords. Like, it's a very difficult and specific skill set. And I was doing that crossword and I was like, God damn, like, this is a really good crossword. It's like, is actually like just very well constructed. And I was like, that's super impressive that Amy did this. And then I saw on the paper, it was like crossword by Adam Aronson. She'd actually included that on the paper in the puzzle box. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense. Because you could tell doing it, it was like, oh no, the person who made this knows how to make crossword puzzles.
Wow.
Yeah. I think puzzle boxes probably easier when you have three people. with diverse skill sets.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, yeah. That was a big part of it, frankly, yeah. Like, you can move quick when you got three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even with the Sudoku, like, before, I was really struggling because there was only, like, six, eight numbers on the entire Sudoku when we first started. But I'd started marking, like, some of the boxes had, like, two options. So I marked in the corners for the boxes, like, this could be a one or a seven. So as soon as I got the rest of the numbers, I could knock them out really quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we, of course, get on our train to Nuremberg, which, let me tell you, one of the worst jet lag trains of all time, and not just because of the dream. It was one of the busiest. I think legitimately, I don't know if I've ever been on a two-hour train ride that was that consistently packed. Mm. It was like, we like initially got on and we were like, oh, surely all these people are just like using, like oftentimes like you leave a hub on a commuter train and it's like all these people are going to the suburb of Stuttgart that they live in, right? So they're going to all get off soon. And then for like the longer distance segment, surely it'll get less busy, right? That's normally how it goes. Wrong. Not in this case. The people just kept getting on. I don't understand why. We were going through like small towns, and there were just always more people getting on. So it was like legit shoulder to shoulder the entire time. And eventually we figured out that we couldn't even walk through the train because we had first class Eurorail passes as we normally do. So we were like, maybe there's some seats in like a first class section. The problem was like, we physically could not walk through the train. It was so packed. So our strategy was at each stop, we would like run from one carriage to the next to make our way up towards the first class section of the train.
Yeah, smart.
And eventually, Toby and Michelle made it before I did because they were like riskier at one of the stops. I was like freaked out because I thought it was going to be a quick stop. So they made it and texted me. So we made it to a first class section, which itself was still packed. But yeah, eventually after like 45 minutes, we made it to some seats. And that felt great until we heard a loud bang.
I don't even understand how a train can hit a tree.
Well, I think the tree had fallen on the tracks.
Well, you had the translation from the driver, and it sounded like they hit one of the actual railway sleepers, like the wooden things.
Oh, really?
Well, like that's how you translate. He said ledge. He didn't say... I assumed ledge meant like one of the sleepers.
I don't know. I mean, in the moment it happened, I was actually napping. I was napping, which was delightful, and I got woken up by it. I wasn't like fully asleep, but I, you know, sort of in that interstitial phase of sleeping on transit.
For sure.
I opened my eyes immediately and I saw like the wood splinters flying by the window.
Whoa.
So immediately knew what happened. So it was pretty understandable. And then we just stopped and they whipped out some high-vises, got onto the tracks and gotten into, I guess, inspection mode, which I will point out is the second time we've been on transit, it's hit something, they whiffed out the high vises, and they go into inspection mode this season for us.
Wait, what was the other time?
Wait, remind me. The bus.
Oh, the bus.
The bus
crash.
Right,
right. Sorry, the bus. Of course, the bus.
This is also the second time that I have benefited from the opposing team being in actual danger.
Yeah.
With the snowstorm the first time around. Oh, not the snow, or your car breaking down in the frigid cold the first season. Yep.
Anyway, what comes of the train hitting tree thing? Do they make it out of Nuremberg?
We'll find
out. All that and more next episode on whatever this show is called. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.